Olivia Vandergriff. Snow is thigh high and the going slow. She plunges through drifts like a pack animal, Olivia Vandergriff, back to the boarding house on the edge of campus. Her last session ever of linear regression and time series models has finally ended. The carillon on the quad peals 5. But this close to the solstice, blackness closes around Olivia like midnight. Breath crusts her upper lip. She sucks it back in, and ice crystals coat her pharynx. The cold drives a metal filament up her nose. She could die out here for real, 5 blocks from home. The novelty thrills her. December of senior year. The semester so close to over. She might stumble now, fall face first, and still roll across the finish line. What's left? A short answer exam on survival analysis. Final paper in intermediate macroeconomics. 110 slide IDs in masterpieces of world art, her blow-off elective. 10 more days plus 1 more semester, and she's done forever. 3 years ago, she thought actuarial science was the same as accounting. When the counselor told her it dealt in the price and probability of uncertain events, the rigor, combined with ghoulishness, made her declare, "Yes, please." If life demanded a slavish commitment to one pursuit, there were worse things to commit to than calculating the cash value of death. Being one of 3 females in the program also gave her a little frisson, a kick to defy the odds. But the kick has long since gone limp. She's taken the National Society of Actuaries preliminary exam 3 times and failed all 3. Part of the problem is aptitude. Part is the sex, drugs, and all-night parties. She'll get the degree. She can still manage that. If not, she'll sample whatever opportunities disaster presents. Disaster is, as actuarial science proves and Olivia reassures her overly concerned friends, just another number. She turns the corner onto Cedar in the half-dark. Other students, stumbling under the weight of their own backpacks, have beaten trails through the snow, clumping around the first walker's mostly terrible guesses. Beneath the fresh drifts, cracked sidewalks ride up over bulging tree roots in the world's slowest seismic waves. She looks up. Although she'll miss precious little when she leaves this shit-kicking backwater, she does love the street lamps. Their Gilded Age, cream-colored globes look like stilled candles. They light a soft path through the student rentals all the way to her own rambling American Gothic, once some surgeon's mansion, now chopped up into private cubbies with 5 separate fire escapes and 8 mailboxes. Lit by the street lamp in front of her house is a singular tree that once covered the earth. A living fossil, one of the oldest, strangest things that ever learned the secret of wood. A tree with sperm that must swim through droplets to fertilize the ovule. Its leaves vary as much as human faces. Its limbs, in the streetlight, have that extraordinary profile, lined with bizarre, short side spurs that make the tree unmistakable, even in winter. She has lived under the tree for a whole semester and doesn't know it's there. She passes it again tonight without seeing. She stumbles up the snowy steps into a dark hall full of bicycles. She shuts the front door behind her, but frigid air keeps pouring through around the seams. The light switch teases her from across the foyer. 6 steps into the black gauntlet, Olivia slits her ankle on a derailleur. Her curses echo up the stairs. She has raged against the bikes at house meetings all semester long. But here the bikes are, despite all the house votes, her frozen ankle gouged and smeared with bike grease, and her enraged sense of justice shouting, "Shit, shit, shit!" Nothing matters. 5 little months, and life will begin. Even if she's still living in rented squalor in a cold water apartment over a breakfast dive where she waitresses, all the forthcoming crimes and misdemeanors will be gloriously hers alone. Someone snickers at the top of the stairs. "Everything all right?" Suppressed giggles seep down from the kitchen, her housemates entertained by her routine rage. "Just fine," she chirps. Home, December 12, 1989. The Berlin Wall coming down. From the Baltic to the Balkans, millions of oppressed people take to the winter streets. Her scraped open ankle spills blood through the foyer. So what? She bends to press a dry Kleenex to her wound, stanching the flow. It stings like mad. Hugs await her above. 2 routine, 1 mocking, 1 cold, and 1 filled with half a year of hangdog longing. She hates her housemates' endless cheap hugging, but she hugs them back in kind. The group converged the previous spring in an orgy of mutual enthusiasm. By the end of September, the communal love fest spun out into daily recrimination. "Whose hairs are these in my razor?" "Somebody stole the thimble of hash I left in the freezer." "Who the hell stuffed that leftover turkey log down the disposal?" But a girl can do anything with the finish line in sight. The kitchen smells like heaven, though no one invites her to share the meal. She checks the refrigerator. The prospects are abysmal. She hasn't eaten for 10 hours, but she decides to hold out a little longer. If she can wait to eat until after her private party, eating will be like dancing with demigods. "Got divorced today," she announces. Scattered cheers and clapping. "Took you long enough," says the least favorite of her former soulmates. "True. Been getting divorced for longer than I was married." "Don't change your name back. This one's much better." "What were you thinking, anyway, getting married?" "That ankle looks bad. You should at least clean off the grease." Another round of stifled giggles. "Love you guys, too." Olivia steals a bottle of somebody's nut brown ale, the only thing in the refrigerator not rancid, and squirrels it away into her rehabbed attic room. There, in bed, she knocks back the contents of the bottle without lifting her head. Acquired talent. Grease and blood from her ankle smear the bedspread. She and Davy met in court 1 last time that afternoon, between her econ and linear analysis. Now they're done, and the final decree has no power to sadden her further. She does have her regrets, tying her life to another's, a whim of sophomore spring, felt so all-in, so sweeping and innocent. For 2 years, their parents raged at the idiocy. Their friends never understood, but she and Davy were determined to prove everyone wrong. They did love each other, in their way, even if their way consisted mostly of getting high, reading Rumi out loud, then screwing each other senseless. But marriage turned them both abusive. After the 3rd time through the funhouse werewolf act, which ended up with her fracturing her 5th metacarpal, somebody had to sober up and pull the plug. They had no property to speak of, and no kids except the 2 of them. The divorce should have taken 1.5 days. That it took more than 10 months was mostly a function of nostalgic lust on the part of both litigants. Olivia sets the empty beer on the radiator with the other dead recruits and fishes in the nest of crap by her bed until she finds her disc player. Divorce requires a memorial service. Marriage was her adventure, and she needs to commemorate. Davy kept the roomie, but she still has scads of their favorite trance music, and dope enough to turn the regrets into laughs sufficient for today. There's her linear analysis final to worry about, of course, but that's still 3 days off, and she always studies better when a little loose. It should have occurred to her 2 years ago, even in the initial thrill, that any relationship where she lied 3 times in the first 2 hours might not be a great long-term bet. They walked under the cherry blossoms in the campus arboretum. She professed a deep love for all flowering things, which was a flavor of true, at least right then. She told him that her father was a human rights lawyer, again, not entirely false, and that her mother was a writer, which was pretty much bullshit, though based on a fact-like scenario. She isn't ashamed of her parents. In fact, she once got suspended from grade school for punching a chick who called her father flaccid. But in the world of satisfying stories, her preferred domain, both of Olivia's parents are so much less than they should have been. So she spruced them up a tad for the man she'd already decided she would spend the rest of her life with. Davy lied, too. He claimed he didn't need to graduate, that he'd done so well on the civil service exam, the State Department had offered him a job. The fib was outrageous enough to be kind of beautiful. She did have a thing for fantasists. Later, under the cherry blossom snow, he'd flashed her the little Victorian tin with the mustache wax ad on the top and the 6 long, thin bullets of weed inside. She'd never seen anything like it, except in high school anti-drug films. And soon enough, she was sold on the fine art of hang gliding above the busy earth. So began her still-unfolding romance with a gift that kept on giving, a romance that, unlike the one with Davy, was sure to last a lifetime. She cues up the trance playlist, sits in her beloved window seat, opens the sash to the frigid night, and blows puffs of smoke onto the death trap fire escape. The phone rings, but she doesn't pick up. It's one of 3 men whose beliefs about her logistics she can no longer keep straight. The phone rings on. She has no answering machine. Who would use a device that leaves you responsible for calling someone back? She counts the rings, a kind of meditation. 12 summons, while she blows 2 fat puffs of hash cloud into the frozen outdoors. The crazed persistence narrows down the caller until she knows. It can only be her ex checking in, hoping to mark the occasion with 1 last loving brawl. The psycho-sociosexual awakening of little Olivia. So much more education than she signed on for when she came to town. She arrived on campus 3 years before, with a teddy bear, a hairdryer, a hot air popper, and a high school varsity letter in volleyball. She means to leave next spring with a crater-strewn transcript, 2 tongue studs, a florid tattoo on her scapula, and a scrapbook of mental travels she could never have imagined. She's still a good girl, of sorts. The plan is simply to be a semi-bad girl for a few more months. Then she'll straighten up, fly right, and head westerly, where all good fuck-ups always head. Once out there, wherever there is, there'll be plenty of time to figure out how to salvage her bungled degree. She can be ingenious when required, and she knows how to make herself more than cute with the little application. Things are happening. The world is cracking open. She might check out Berlin now that the future is headed that way. Vilnius, Warsaw, someplace where the rules are being hammered out from scratch. The music pelts her deltoids and takes her brain out for a lazy adult swim. Spiders set up a colony under her skin. When she places a palm on her thigh, the push of it keeps gliding all the way out to the idea horizon. Soon the beautiful brainstorms come, the ones that link up in front of her eyes and make the whole mess of human history so lovely and self-evident. The universe is big, and she's allowed to fly around through the nearby galaxies for a while, zapping things for fun, if she doesn't abuse her powers or hurt anyone. She does so love this ride. Then the tunes start up, the inner ones. She shuts off the disc player and tries to figure out how to cross the ocean of room. When she stands, her head keeps rising, straight up, into a whole new layer of being. Her laugh propels her, helps her balance, and she sails off across the floorboards, her tits glowing like precious pearls. After a while, she gets to where she was going and holds still for a minute, trying to recall why she needed to get there. Hard to hear anything over the magic melodies of her own devising. She sits at her chipboard student desk and fishes out her song notebook. Real musical notation reads to her like so much secret writing, but she has devised her own system for preserving the tunes that come to her while stepping out. Line color, thickness, and location all encode a record of the gift melodies. And the next day, after her buzz wears off, she can look at these scribbles and hear the music all over again. Like copping a contact buzz for free. Tonight's tune pushes her back into the chair as a band of unknown instruments play the song the angels will play for God on the night he decides to bring everybody home. It's the best inner soundtrack she has ever managed, perhaps the best thing she's done with her entire life. She starts crying and wants to call her parents. She wants to go back down into the rooming house and embrace her housemates, this time for real. The music says, "You don't know how brilliantly you shine." It says, "Something is waiting for you, the clean, perfect thing you've wanted since childhood." Then that hallowed bliss turns ridiculous, and she laughs, a little wildly, at her own wasted soul. But the tune and the bliss leave her tingling all over. The idea of a hot shower takes on religious urgency. Her rigged-up bathroom, carved out of the same attic as her bedroom, sports a skin of frost on the inside of its north wall. The secret is to run the hot water before disrobing. By the time she gets into the do-it-yourself shower, she's faint from hunger, and the bathroom air is a paisley swirl of fire and ice. She looks down. The floor of the stall fills with bloody lather. She screams. Then she remembers her sliced ankle. As she soaps the oozing wound, the giggles come again. Humans are so frail. How have they survived long enough to wreak all the shit they have? The cleaning stings like hell. The gash is jagged and ugly. If it scars, she can hide it with another tattoo, some kind of ankle chain, perhaps. She works the soap up her legs. The slickness of her skin feels like the best divorce present a girl could ask for. Each touch is electric. Her body brightens, demanding satisfaction. Someone knocks hard. "You okay in there?" Her voice takes a moment to catch. "Go away, please." "You screamed." "Scream over. Thank you." She materializes back in her room. Her body, draped in towel and steam, shines with need. Even the gelid air strokes her like a sex toy. The world offers nothing better than bringing yourself over the crest of ecstasy. She drops the towel and splays into bed. The fall into the blankets lasts forever and keeps improving. She reaches up into the shade of the floor lamp to shut it off and plunge herself into delicious darkness. But as her damp hand pats for the switch on the cheap socket, all the current in the subcode house enters her limb and pours into her body. Her muscles close around the jolt as in some science experiment, clamping her hand around the electricity that's killing her. She lies there, naked, wet, convulsing, her hands snaked up in the air, trying to force the word help from the bottom of her lungs out through a mouth that the voltage locks rigid. She manages to birth up one ambiguous moan before her heart stops. Down below, her housemates hear the cry, her second of the night. The sound's raw intimacy makes them blush. Olivia, one says, smirking, don't even ask. The whole house dims the moment she dies.